Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and I apologize for not really doing a live show over the last few weeks. There was a lot on my plate, and it was now there's a lot to cover. In the last few weeks, you know, I've been talking about the genocide in Gaza, the struggle in Palestine against the Palestinian people against the barbaric Israeli regime, which has been carrying out the genocide for the last 6 months, you know, actually carrying out genocide since 1948, but a lot has changed in the last few weeks. I mean, we saw Israel do a absolutely crazy escalation in the war by attacking the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria. Now, you know, attacking a embassy, you know, is completely a violation of international law. I mean, that is protected under the Vienna Convention. It's universally recognized. And basically, the idea of attacking another country's diplomats, you know, I mean, a consulate, a embassy is basically the sovereign territory of that nation, you know, wherever it is. So basically, that was an attack on Iran directly. You know, I mean, Israel basically said, you know, and they they claimed they had the right to do this because there were Iranian military officers in that embassy. You know, they were conducting some sort of meeting there. But once again, that does not hold up under international law. That is a bogus argument. You know, and what happened next, you know, after about 10 days, what happened on Saturday when Iran retaliated and actually launched missile attacks on Israeli air bases inside Israel. That was legitimate self-defense under international law, under the UN charter. Because Israel attacked Iranian territory. And effectively, it was inevitable. It was rendered inevitable that that counterattack would take place, that strike on Israel, on those Israeli air bases would take place because of what the U.S. did. The U.S. and its allies did at the U.N. when, of course, there was a motion to condemn Israel for this attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. And Israel, like, the U.S. blocked that and basically said that and implicitly said that that embassy was fair game. Now, think about the precedent that would have set in global diplomacy if that had actually gone ahead. You know, basically said, like, embassies are fair game. You can attack whatever embassy you want anywhere in the world. You know, diplomats are fair game. Consulates are fair game. Go nuts. You know, they're all military targets. Like, that would basically destroy international diplomacy. You know, that would destroy Iranian sovereignty at that point. And so Iran had to retaliate. You know, there was really no option. You know, if they had not done that on Saturday, then basically, yeah, like, it would have been open season on their diplomats. So that's why that happened. And of course, like, the fact like there was this counterstrike, it's given tremendous hope to Palestinians, like, that they actually have an ally who is capable of striking their oppressor in that way and making them pay a price. You know, that night when that missile strike took place on Saturday, it was actually a night when, I think it was the first night in the last 6 months when Israeli drones were not seen over Gaza, when Israeli airstrikes did not happen over Gaza because they were busy trying to deflect these Iranian drones and missiles. They were trying to attack these military targets inside Israel, and they were military targets. Like, Iran did not target any civilian infrastructure or civilian targets. These were military installations, one of which was the military installation from which the attack apparently was launched. The Israeli attack was launched on the consulate in Damascus. So, anyways, I'm going to play Ben Norton's excellent response to this latest to this incident. He really had some good commentary on it and what it meant for the wider situation in Palestine. So, please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Are we living through the beginning of World War III? This is the question that many people are asking after Iran launched a direct attack on Israel. On the 13th of April, Iran hit Israel with hundreds of drones and missiles. And the U.S. military and the British military were both directly involved in supporting Israel and helping to shoot down Iranian drones. Western governments have loudly condemned this Iranian attack, trying to portray Tehran as an aggressor. However, these Western governments are conveniently erasing very important facts, namely that Iran was acting in self-defense, and Iran only attacked Israel after Israel bombed Iran's embassy in Syria and killed several top Iranian military officials. So it's actually Israel that started this war with U.S. support, and Iran has been abiding by international law, which says very clearly that Tehran is able to respond in self-defense. On the 1st of April, Israel carried out an active war against Iran. And I'm reading here from the New York Times, which is very biased against Iran and very pro-Israel. The New York Times noted that, quote, Israeli warplane struck a building in Damascus that is part of the Iranian embassy complex, and three senior commanders and four officers from the Iranian military were killed in this Israeli attack. The mainstream British think tank Chatham House, which is funded by the British government, published a report warning that Israel's strike on Iran's consulate in Syria could be the spark that ignites the Middle East. And they noted that the Israeli attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus on the 1st of April marks an unprecedented escalation by Israel against Iran. And Israel killed top Iranian soldiers, including a brigadier general. And they referred to this as the clearest signal yet of Israel's determined to shift the conflict's rules of engagement by directly eliminating Iranian leadership. In fact, on the 12th of April, a day before Iran attacked, U.S. President Joe Biden said very clearly that they were expecting an Iranian counterattack, and he threatened Iran and said, "Do not attack Israel. We will protect Israel." Joe Biden's exact quote was, "We are devoted to the defense of Israel. We will support Israel. We will help defend Israel, and Iran will not succeed." However, after the attack, suddenly the message changed, and the U.S. government and its allies portrayed Iran as an aggressor and erased the fact that it was Israel that started this war in the first place. U.S. President Joe Biden released a statement and said, quote, "I condemn Iran's attacks in the strongest possible terms and reaffirm America's ironclad commitment to the security of Israel." No mention of the fact that Iran was acting in self-defense. The British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, released a very similar statement, and he said, "I condemn in the strongest terms the Iranian regime's reckless attack against Israel. Iran has once again demonstrated that it is intent on sowing chaos in its own backyard. We will continue to stand up for Israel's security." What about Iran's security? No mention whatsoever of the fact that Iran was attacked. Iran is the victim, and they're trying to portray the Israeli aggressor as if it were the victim. This blatant hypocrisy is even more outrageous when you realize that on the 4th of April, 3 days after Israel attacked Iran's embassy in Syria and killed top Iranian officials, the US, the UK, and France blocked the Security Council of the United Nations from condemning the Israeli attack. I'm reading here from Reuters, the mainstream British media outlet. Quote, "The United States, Britain, and France opposed a Russian-drafted UN Security Council statement that would have condemned an attack on Iran's embassy compound in Syria." So the US and the UK are portraying Iran as the aggressor, but they refuse to condemn Israel's attack on Iran, and now they're condemning Iran's counterattack in self-defense on Israel. The double standards could not be any more blatant. And it's not like you need to remember years of history, decades of history. We're not going back to the Vietnam War and the Gulf of Tonkin. We're talking about something that happened 2 weeks ago, and yet they're trying to erase what happened this month, this April, and act as though suddenly Iran is attacking Israel out of nowhere. In fact, immediately after launching the attack on Israel, Iran's permanent mission to the United Nations published a statement in which they invoked Article 51 of the UN Charter and noted that this followed a 13-day period marked by the Security Council's inaction and silence, coupled with its failure to condemn the Israeli regime's aggressions. Article 51 of the UN Charter says very clearly that there is a, quote, "inherent right of individual or collective self-defense if an armed attack occurs against a member of the United Nations." And of course, Iran is a member of the UN, and it has a right to invoke Article 51 to act in self-defense, especially considering that Article 51 points out that the Security Council should take measures necessary to maintain international peace and security. However, as we've already established, on the 4th of April, the US, the UK, and the France blocked the Security Council from condemning Israel's attack, providing complete impunity as Israel violated the Vienna Convention that says very clearly that an embassy or a consulate is the sovereign territory of the country to which it belongs. So when Israel attacked Iran's embassy in Syria, It was an act of war against Iran. It was an attack on Iranian sovereign territory. The Security Council refused to take any action, so Iran had no choice but to invoke Article 51 of the UN Charter and respond in order to defend its sovereignty against an act of war carried out by Israel with Western support. It is as clear as day that Iran is abiding by international law, and it's Israel, the US, the UK, and France that are violating international law. But meanwhile, what happened? The Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, released an absurd statement in which he said, quote, "I strongly condemn the serious escalation represented by the large-scale attack launched on Israel by Iran." This is absolutely outrageous. He did not mention that Iran was acting in self-defense, that Israel is the aggressor, that Israel violated international law while Iran is respecting international law. And it shows how these Western colonialist politicians are destroying international law. They're destroying the United Nations. Antonio Guterres is the former prime minister of Portugal. He is a Western politician who has been extremely biased against the global South. And we see constant examples again and again and again of the West voting against the rest of the world in the United Nations, holding the world hostage. The United States has repeatedly used veto power single-handedly in order to prevent the Security Council from passing resolutions that would bring about peace and a ceasefire in Gaza. And yet, Antonio Guterres, he's not doing anything to actually stop Israel from carrying out these war crimes and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. Instead, he's condemning Iran for acting in self-defense. So the Western colonial powers that talk about their so-called rules-based order are destroying the international law-based order and trying to replace it with the arbitrary so-called rules, of course, in which the U.S. makes the rules and orders everyone around. That's the reality of the so-called rules-based order. And meanwhile, back in January, the top UN legal body, the International Court of Justice, ruled very clearly that Israel can be investigated for the worst crimes possible. I'm not going to say the G word because this always gets demonetized when I say the G word, but you know what I'm talking about, the worst crime possible. And the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to stop killing Palestinians in Gaza. And what did Israel do? It ignored the International Court of Justice. The far-right extremist prime minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, said The Hague will not tell us what to do. Amnesty International has pointed out very clearly that Israel, with U.S. support, is violating this ruling by The Hague. Top United Nations experts are saying very clearly that Israel is committing crimes against humanity and the worst crime of all, the G word, which again, because of censorship, I'm not going to say it so I don't get demonetized here. And it's not just in Gaza. Israel is also constantly attacking Lebanon, and not just southern Lebanon. Israel has been launching airstrikes deep into sovereign Lebanese territory. So Israel has been attacking Iranian sovereign territory, attacking Lebanese sovereign territory, violating international law constantly. It is being investigated by the International Court of Justice for the worst possible crimes a state could commit. And meanwhile, the U.S. government has continued sending Israel billions of dollars of weapons to help it carry out these crimes. And the U.S. has been vetoing resolutions in the Security Council that would bring about peace and a ceasefire. And the US, the UK, and France prevented the Security Council from condemning Israel for violating Iranian sovereignty and carrying out an attack on its sovereign territory, on its embassy. And this is why we could be on the verge of World War III. And I'm going to read a quote here from the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, who has been very outspoken in support of Palestinian human rights against the war crimes committed by Israel and the ethnic cleansing. And Colombia's president, Gustavo Petro, warned that we could now be on the cusp of World War III. He said that this is being caused because U.S. support for a G word has set the world on fire. The U.S. and Israel have set the world on fire. They are the ones that are responsible for causing this war. Iran is acting in self-defense according to international law. And any Western government official, any media outlet that tells you otherwise is lying to you. Joe Biden knew before Iran attacked Israel that Iran was preparing a counterattack in self-defense because he knows that Israel provoked this. Other Western governments knew that this could set off a larger regional war that can become a world war, and yet they continue to defend Israel and act as though Israel is the victim when it's the aggressor. Don't let them gaslight you. Don't let them lie to you blatantly to your face. Inform yourself. And here at Geopolitical Economy Report, we are dedicated to informing people about what's actually going on in the world. Because if you only read the mainstream corporate media and listen to what Western government officials say, you will be hopelessly confused by their misinformation. On that note, I'm going to conclude. I'm Ben Norton. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. Please like and subscribe, and I will see you next time.
Okay, so that was Ben Norton's analysis on the Iran's retaliatory strike on Israel. You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU, and I am Siegfried. Now, I want to turn to something else which has been going on in the last few weeks, and that's the whole humanitarian situation in Gaza. I mean, Gaza is in a state of famine right now. I mean, that's clear. There are children dying of malnutrition, you know, like say, like, I mean, I believe we're talking like 75% of the more than 30,000 people who have died in Gaza right now are women and children. I believe it's about 14,000-15,000 children who are now dead. And now they're dying of starvation as well because of the Israeli blockade and the sealing of the various crossings. And, you know, there's still aid trucks lined up at the Egyptian border. They haven't been allowed in. Recently, there's been some just bizarre stunts where, like, you know, this organization called World Central Kitchen. I mean, you might have heard that the UNRWA, like the UN agency, which is responsible for Palestinian refugees feeding and educating Palestinian refugees, has been defunded, you know, by Canada, by the U.S., and like has been prevented from going into Gaza by the Israelis. And instead, they were bringing in this organization backed by the U.S. State Department, backed by the Israeli government, called World Central Kitchen, which is a private NGO, and it was supposed to, you know, do a run basically around this UN agency and supposedly bring in aid to Gaza, food aid. And they brought this, they did this whole publicity stunt where they brought this barge from Cyprus, landed on this this makeshift quay just off the coast there, and they brought in, like, I don't know, a few, like, less than a day's worth of supplies or something like that into Gaza. It was a very minuscule amount. And basically the stunt kind of got blown wide open, this PR stunt that the Israeli government was doing in conjunction with this this NGO was kind of blown open about a week or so ago, when seven aid workers from this agency were once again, Israeli-backed and U.S.-backed aid agency, World Central Kitchen, were killed in an Israeli drone strike. Seven of them. This is including, like, Canadian citizens, Australian citizens, U.S. citizens, U.K. citizens, in these seven. They were killed by the Israeli government, by trigger-happy drone operators, you know. And you saw kind of even some pretty hardline Israeli supporters in the U.S. government started to kind of change their tune when that happened. Like, Israel is burning quite a few bridges at this point with its genocidal behavior and its policies. But I just wanted to play a clip from the Gray Zone, which really unpacks this whole, you know, Israeli-U.S. strategy of, like, building a port off of Gaza, some sort of makeshift port created by the U.S. Navy that's supposedly going to bring in aid, and it's going to somehow save the humanitarian situation. And the whole thing turns out to be a PR stunt from the beginning. And it's not a new concept either. Like, it's been floated around for years. And the whole point of it, of this whole thing of, like, bringing in aid, you know, from, like, Western agencies and building, like, some sort of port off the coast of Gaza where, like, Israel can control what gets in and out, and everything is controlled by them, and there's no UN agencies involved or anything like that. Like, that actually has been something they've been pushing for years. And apparently that's still a project. I mean, the U.S. Navy is still apparently going to build this thing. But yeah, this next report from the Gray Zone really unpacks that. So I'm going to play that right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Within the Democratic Party base, there's this rebellion taking place. And we saw what happened in Michigan, 100,000 uncommitted, something like 20% of voters in Minnesota voted uncommitted, all in areas where there are disproportionate representation of younger people, college age people. So the Democratic Party has a problem. Biden has a problem, and he needs to cook up some kind of, he needs to whip up a dog and pony show to distract everyone from what Israel's doing. And Israel also has a stake in this as well. Ever since Israel put Gaza under siege in 2005, they have been seeking to displace their responsibility as the occupier onto the quote unquote international community, whose political class, which is a synonym for the collective West, and whose political class is fully co-opted by the Israel lobby. So Biden comes up with this port, idea, and it's in the works. Let's take a listen to John Kirby on the port. John Kirby being Israel's outsourced spokesman at the White House. And I don't know if there's any particular portion of this we should focus on.
Yeah, you want to start this here. I can pull it up. Or you got it. I started at 1:45.
We got some buffering to do here. We got that American-made internet. All right. Why don't you pull it up?
Well, in that clip, basically, Kirby says that it's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks to build this thing, and it's just such a joke. I mean, listen to this. Listen to him describe it, and just what you know, everyone can judge whether or not this sounds like this is going to help the people of Gaza.
Floating dock and how long you think that might take and how they do it without putting boots on the ground at all, connecting it somehow.
Pentagon East, this is called JLOTS, Joint Logistics Over the Shore. It's a temporary pier, floating dock, if you will, that is transported in pieces. The first pieces of it are on the way now. They left Norfolk just a little bit earlier this week. It's going to probably take about 6 to 8 weeks or so for all the pieces to get in place and for it to become operational.
So 6 to 8 weeks to build this floating dock, this temporary pier. And what's going to happen between now and those 6 to 8 weeks? How many people are going to die because they can't get any aid because Biden won't put any pressure on Israel to allow in the thousands of trucks carrying it? You know, and of course, even his estimate there of 6 to 8 weeks, you can tell he was just putting that out there without any real certainty. And so it'll probably take even longer than that. But of course, even when it's complete, would it even be close to meeting Gaza's needs? Of course not. So it's just such a transparent stunt. And it sounds impressive. He likes to use the technical terms, JLOTS, you know, the parts of just left Norfolk, or Virginia, wherever it is. They're all impressed with themselves, but this is just a stunt. It's a complete stunt.
Yeah, so apparently a lot of personnel in Norfolk have been taken by surprise. They're shocked that they're being deployed. They're suddenly having to say goodbye to their families. They don't understand the mission. And neither does John Kirby or anyone in the White House. I don't know if the Pentagon even understands how it's going to work out. Before I raise some questions about the actual implementation of this mission, we should consider what it was inspired by. It's actually inspired by Israel. Israel came up with this plan. Its former transportation minister, who is a right-wing ultra-nationalist fascist named Israel Katz, put forward this plan in 2015, and it was rolled out at the IDC Herzliya Conference, which is sort of like the Woodstock National Security Conference for neocons. And here's what it looked like.
Thank you. יוזמת האי המלאכותי נועדה לתת מענה למציאות שראה לפלסטינים ואינה טובה לישראל. כיום, מדינת ישראל נתפסת כאחראית לרצועה, אף שיצאה ממנה לפני יותר מעשור,
והיא צינור חמצן יחיד לתושביה.
הקמת אי מלאכותי מול חופי עזה, ובו נמל מתעדיד לתושביה.
הקמת checkpoint which Israel controls.
Turn off the volume on this. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just, you know, but I wanted people to get the vibe. But yeah. It's like the Hebrew triggering you? Did you have a bad Hebrew school experience or?
I mean, I can only it's not triggering, but I just there's no point in hearing it.
No, not. Well, anyway, they put forward this plan for an island and you know, Israel can bomb this highway at will if anything untoward happens there. And there it is. And it's basically, this was the idea, was Gaza will perpetually be under siege, perpetually occupied by Israel, but the international community will supply Gaza and Israel will check everything that goes in and be able to limit everything that goes in. And why should Israel even have to allow those trucks carrying basic goods into Gaza to traverse its own territory? Let's just put it out in the sea and just let Gaza totally drift away, which means eventually maybe we can pay Egypt off to take it as part of its territory. Who knows? Or we'll just declare it a separate country. So this is the plan that Biden is taking on.
Ugh, God.
Now we have to raise some questions here about what's going to happen with the U.S. troops going to Gaza. Israel's always been trying to drag the U.S. into its wars. And now it's sort of like, who's dragging who? Israel would love to see a security incident where Hamas can be blamed for attacking U.S. troops to draw the U.S. in more deeply, especially at a time of such crisis for Biden. And U.S. troops are going to be effectively invading Gaza's waters because it's not a state, it can't claim its international sovereign sea space, which Israel besieges, won't let anything go beyond 3 kilometers. Fishermen, now people are just getting bombed on the shore for fishing just by putting nets out into the sea. But there is international law that applies here. UN Resolution 242 declares that Gaza's occupied, Israel is the occupier. The U.S. military will be collaborating then with the occupier in some capacity in violation of the international rights of the occupied population. They say they're doing it to feed them, but the U.S. is also arming Israel to kill them, which is just the most stunning, absurd hypocrisy charades I've ever seen. So how is the U.S. not invading Gaza? That's a question that needs to be put to the State Department and the Pentagon. I hope some reporters go there and ask that. But the U.S. is going to have to do something to the Biden administration. It's going to have to do something to create some plausible deniability to that question. So they're going to very likely give contracts to shady companies consisting of former military leadership to somehow get that aid between this floating port, which itself will be very difficult to maintain, will require constant maintenance, and the Gaza Strip. And then how will it get to the population? Will Americans be delivering it? Who will be delivering it? Presumably, it will be Palestinians, like vetted aid organizations, receiving it on the shore. But Aaron, as you pointed out, like people are getting so desperate that they are running up on the trucks, grabbing as much as they can. I mean, it's a matter of survival. So who will provide security to those trucks?
Yeah, especially after Israel's attacked the Hamas police escorts that were guiding these trucks, making the deliveries impossible.
Yeah, so Hamas police aren't allowed to exist. Hamas police did a very effective job of maintaining order under very difficult conditions throughout this entire siege, and they're not allowed to exist in broad daylight. So the plan, which hasn't been officially put forward, I've seen speculation in media, like the BBC reported this. The plan calls for Israel to maintain, like invading Israeli troops, those same guys that are taking selfies of themselves playing with women's underwear, rifling through drawers of women's underwear in the homes of people they've displaced and killed in Gaza. Those people are going to be providing security for the American aid mission to provide aid to Gaza. I mean, are we not recognizing what a boondoggle is on the way and how many more massacres will be committed with direct U.S. involvement? And I mean, and what about the troops? Like, we saw an active duty service member stage an extreme form of protest outside the U.S. embassy, Aaron Bushnell. Now troops are going to be forced to personally interact and collaborate with an Israeli military that's carrying out a live stream genocide. How do the troops feel about that? And how much more can it degrade an American military that is struggling to recruit more than at any time in its history? So, I mean, I think one of the biggest political one of the biggest scandals of this war is on the way.
You're listening to Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and that was the Gray Zone that I just played there, that clip, unpacking the whole situation, humanitarian situation in Gaza, and this whole like plot by Israel, by the U.S. to do this whole PR stunt with the supposed aid port, which the U.S. Navy is going to build, and just how bogus that whole thing is. But there is hope for the situation in Gaza, and that really comes down to and the Iranian missile strikes, which just took place, are a big part of this, is the fact that the Israeli military is so bogged down now, and bogged down on multiple fronts. You know, it's got to face the front on Lebanon. It's got to face the front on its, you know, ships being blockaded by Yemen in the Red Sea. It's got to face down resistance forces in Iraq, in addition to the resistance by the Palestinian resistance and in Gaza and the West Bank, and increasingly in the West Bank. I mean, the situation there is increasingly intense. IED attacks, gun battles, you name it. During the Iranian missile strikes, actually, a whole section of the apartheid wall in the West Bank was torn down by Palestinians. It was a very moving scene. So incredible acts of resistance and bravery going on. And the Israeli military increasingly is bogged down. It's lost a lot of men. It's lost a lot of equipment. It's being hit from multiple fronts. And increasingly, even with the colossal aid it's received from the U.S., it increasingly cannot stand. In the long term, it cannot stand. And even in the short term, it's looking pretty wobbly. It's looking pretty fragile. So Richard Medhurst has been doing a lot of excellent commentary he's been doing commentary for years on Palestine. But he, even back in January, and that's when he actually did this next clip, where he just talked about Israel's strategic situation, basically how he cannot win. They cannot win. Like, Palestine will prevail. The resistance will prevail. It's Israel's bogged down on, I believe he said, six fronts. But I'll let basically his talk speak for itself. I'll play Richard's talk right now about the military and strategic situation in the Middle East today. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
On October 7th, the world was at a point where the Palestinian cause was all but forgotten. Ukraine was the main focus, Saudi Arabia and Israel were on the verge of normalizing ties and moving ahead with their economic ambitions using Gaza's geostrategic location and stealing its gas, as I outlined in part one and part two. When Hamas saw Netanyahu's plan for a new Middle East with Palestine literally wiped off the map, they understood that it was now or never, and they preemptively struck Israel on October 7th to sabotage these ambitions. And they used that as an opportunity also to take hostages so they could later free the thousands of Palestinians held hostage in Israeli jails. Hamas wanted a simple hostage exchange, but Israel jumped at the opportunity to play the victim card, to make up propaganda and start ethnically cleansing Gaza for their economic ambitions. A genocide on live TV. The Israelis know that they cannot fight man to man against the resistance in 2023. So they just slaughter civilians. To the point they even massacred some of their own people on October 7th with attack helicopters and tanks. That day was a major humiliation for Israel. So to save face, they said, A, we will defeat Hamas or Hamas, and B, retrieve the hostages. Okay, well, what has Israel achieved in 3 months? Nothing. Israel, this great military power, summoned 360,000 reservists, 150,000 active troops. It has nuclear weapons, military and political support from the West. Biden sent them $14 billion and Delta Force. And what did Israel achieve? Not one military objective, nothing. Hamas is still here. Every day, Qassam brigades film themselves, you know, just casually taking out Israeli tanks, bulldozers, ground units. I mean, each destroyed Merkava tank is costing the Israelis a fortune. Israel are taking so many casualties, they just withdrew 5 brigades plus their elite Golani brigade. I mean, Israel was unable to liberate a single hostage, and they even killed over 60 Israeli hostages in Gaza with their own bombs. But the war in Gaza is not just in Gaza. This is a war on multiple fronts. The first is Gaza, but the second is the West Bank. Jenin, Nablus, Ramallah, and many other towns are still under Israeli occupation. It's war every day. And after October 7th, Israel executed even more raids, more arrests, killings, torture. This united the resistance, you know, factions like the Jenin Marchers Brigade and the Lion's Den, inside the West Bank, and it united the West Bank with Gaza. I mean, this is such a blow to Israel. Remember, Palestinians signed the Oslo Accords. Palestinians recognized Israel. They gave half their land away. And what did they get after 30 years? Israel built more illegal settlements, killed more people, and blocked any viable path to a Palestinian state. The third front in this war is Syria. Syria is the only Arab state actor in the region that still champions the Palestinian cause. I mean, Palestinian Islamic Jihad is headquartered in Damascus, for example. And Syria is demonized because of this, and it suffers at the hands of the same enemies. Israel have been occupying the Syrian Golan Heights since 1967. One third of Syria's land, with all the oil and the crops, is occupied by the United States. Now, the fourth front in this war is Iraq. Iraq is still occupied by the US since the invasion in 2003. The Iraqi parliament voted to kick the Americans out, but they don't respect their wishes. So you've got US bases in Iraq, you've got US bases on top of Syria's oil fields, and with the permission of the Syrian government, the Iraqi resistance move between the two countries, and they attack these American bases daily with drones, rockets, mortars, to create chaos for the Americans and for their occupation, and punish Washington for its genocide in Gaza. Remember, this is just as much an American war as it is Israeli. Now, the fifth front in the war is Lebanon. Since October 7th, Hezbollah have been firing daily at Israeli observation posts, destroying their most advanced surveillance equipment. And by limiting the front to a zone of a few kilometers deep, Hezbollah have masterfully put pressure on Israel while also avoiding escalation, thereby drawing Israel's forces north and stretching them thin. Over 100,000 Israelis have been evacuated and put into hotels, placing an enormous burden on the Israeli economy and giving them a taste of their own medicine, of what it feels like to be displaced by war. Israel invaded and occupied Lebanon several times, and Hezbollah are the ones that finally kicked them out in 2000, except for an area called Shab'a Farms, which is still occupied. Now, Yemen is the sixth front in this war, and probably the most important. I mean, Yemen have done what Arab countries should have done from the very beginning: shut down the trade routes. Yemen have shut down the Red Sea and one of the most vital shipping lanes in the world. Yemen's position towards Israel is simple. You blockade Gaza, we blockade you. So effective is Yemen's endeavor that global trade is disrupted and ships have to go the long way around Africa like the old days, adding time and cost. Western companies in Israel are losing billions of dollars. Cargo traffic at Eilat is down 80%. Remember, Israel were also involved in the Saudi and American war against Yemen, and they have an illegal military presence on the Yemeni island of Socotra. The US lost that war, but now foolishly declare a new war on Yemen by killing 10 Yemeni soldiers. Look, if the Americans think that they have the right to come all the way from the other side of the planet and police the Red Sea to protect their precious Israeli base, well, then Yemen certainly have the right to close it. Their water, their rules. The Israeli economy is failing very badly since October 7th. The shekel is down. You've got 300,000 displaced settlers who need to be put up in hotels, fed, given benefits. Many small businesses have had to shut down. Many Israelis are not coming to work. Israelis' trust in their military and government has eroded. They failed to protect them on October 7th and even killed some of their own people and killed some of the hostages. There is a lot of internal pressure on the Israeli government, especially from the families of hostages. Many Israeli soldiers are now disabled or suffering psychological trauma if they haven't been killed already on the front. You know, Israel claimed to be the safest place for Jews. At least 500,000 Israelis have left since October 7th, and it's unlikely they'll return. Israel's very existence is now under a microscope. Zionism is facing an existential crisis. I mean, it's a product of the 19th century. How can anyone in 2023 continue to justify settler colonialism? South Africa, who suffered under settler colonialism and apartheid, have now referred Israel to the International Court of Justice for genocide in Gaza. Malaysia have imposed a ban on all Israeli-owned and flagged ships. Colombia and Chile have recalled their ambassadors to Israel. Bolivia cut ties completely. Israel, you know, their image as a military power is gone. Netanyahu has nothing to show for the last 3 months in Gaza and has turned to assassinating resistance leaders who aren't even in Gaza. You know, the Israelis want to bait Hezbollah and bait Iran into a wider war so Netanyahu can stay in power with his war cabinet. And so in the span of a week, the Israelis have assassinated an Iranian officer in Syria, a Hamas leader in Lebanon, and bombed a commemoration in Iran on the anniversary of Soleimani's death. These events are no coincidence. Remember, Hamas doesn't run the West Bank, nor Syria, nor Lebanon, and yet Israel just keeps attacking them almost every day. This shows you that the Israelis are the problem. Even if Hamas disappeared the next second, Israel would still behave like this and still be occupying other countries and murdering people. It took the Israelis, by the way, 3 months to kill one Hamas leader who was not even in Gaza. So, yeah, very impressive. Also, Israel have broken the rules of engagement. They have changed the equation by choosing to escalate against Hamas and Hezbollah. So now it becomes necessary for the resistance to respond, but without escalating.
لن تبقى دون ود وعقاب وبيننا وبينكم الميدان والأيام والليالي.
Clearly, the Israelis can target someone all the way in Beirut or Damascus and be precise when they want to. In Gaza, however, they choose to be imprecise and use 2,000-pound bombs to kill as many civilians as possible on an unprecedented scale. At the same time, the resistance has never been stronger. Israel and the US are drowning on six fronts. Israel is slaughtering people in this fashion precisely because it cannot win on the battlefield. Man to man, soldier to soldier, Israel fails. Failing to defeat Hamas, failing to rescue any hostages, Israel's objective is to make Gaza unlivable by demolishing its crucial infrastructure, hospitals, sanitation, roads, transport, schools. Israel's goal is ethnic cleansing. And while Israel succeeded in killing civilians and starving them and destroying Gaza's infrastructure, the civilians didn't leave. Palestinians aren't going anywhere. Israel and its benefactors have only proven that they are hypocrites and terrorists. Hence Israel's targeting of journalists to hide its crimes from the world. You know, this war has backfired on Israel, as the Palestinian cause is now back in the spotlight. The resistance factions are united, as are the fronts, and Saudi-Israeli normalization is on hold. Israel is losing the propaganda war. Social media has raised awareness among young people. They see the double standard, how the West gave Ukraine weapons to fight Russia, but when it comes to the Palestinians, they oppress them and instead help Israel, the oppressor. People also realized that the West and Israel are hypocrites. This war has exposed how the West do not respect international law or human rights or democracy, but constantly undermine these values while lecturing other countries in the global South and sanctioning them. Israel has lost all credibility as more people learn about Zionism and settler colonialism. This whole image that the Israelis have tried to cultivate for 75 years, all the legitimacy, has gone down the toilet. public opinion is shifting in favor of Palestine, and people worldwide are coming out to protest regularly. People see now that for the last 400 years, you've had the same powers committing the same crimes wherever they go. Genocide of Native Americans, genocide of Palestinians, genocide in the Congo, land theft, slavery, racism, apartheid, dropping nuclear weapons on civilians, carving up the Middle East, carving up Africa, carving up Yugoslavia, dividing Korea, dividing Vietnam, bombing Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, bombing Yugoslavia, invading Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Palestine, sanctions, embargoes, coups in Latin America, coups in Africa, supporting apartheid South Africa, and on and on and on. What Western values are these exactly? Why is it always the same handful of Europeans, especially but not limited to Anglo-American corporations, armies, and banks? Are we supposed to be proud of that? You know, Biden and the United States, they support Israel so adamantly because Israel is America's outpost in the Middle East. It is a base. And once Israel loses its grip on Palestine, the United States will lose its grip on the region and then its hegemony. Palestinians are fighting a war in Gaza on behalf of the entire world against Western imperialism. The West want to rule the Middle East with terrorism and fear, with occupation and oppression, with murder and theft, stealing. Look how they suck the planet dry and fill it with military bases and enslave everyone, killing and displacing millions over and over and over. They violate international law, they deprive people of freedom, of life, murder journalists, murder children, murder civilians. No one is safe. What Israel and the West are doing in Gaza is an attack on humanity itself. It is an affront on all of us. Standing with Gaza is to stand against imperialism, against Zionism, and against US hegemony. Against the powers that oppressed blacks, South Africans, Palestinians, and Native Americans. It is the most important, the quintessential fight for justice, for world peace, for security, and freedom from oppression. It's not enough to just know these facts. You have to share this video. You have to educate people. Many are unaware or conditioned. Many are unsure. It's not enough to just watch. You have to pass on the message. You have to go out and demonstrate. You have to take a stand against this injustice. Be on the right side of history.
Yeah, yeah, it's Low Key, and the main man, Mr. Adoni, tell him how you feel.
Yo, Low Key, you know we take life for granted too much. Them crumbs that are left from our food and we throw away, people in Iraq or Palestine could live with it. Then 1p, 2p, 5p, throw it on the floor. Because we can't buy nothing with it, don't mean we can't save it and give it to charity.
Too many suffering, too many tears. To see how you die, I'm knowing for years. When we look around, nobody cares. And the people, they're living in fear. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good, we're not great right now. See the big lips I feel right now. After get up people I must see it right now. Whoa, resisting it to change right now. Too much with a good on me not grave right now. You know see the big lips I feel right now. After get up people I must see it right now.
Music is my natural resource, now I want it back. Till I sever every single chain, I will not relax. Just constant attack, till my world looks like Montserrat. Contact my comrades for combat, what's conscious rap? When you say the truth, they attack like a saber tooth. Thinking clear, they make you disappear. Like you hate the fruit, don't need more Bowens. We don't need more Rebors, Weed or Lee or Cohens. They tell us about terrorism and tell us about terrorists. Look up the definition and tell us what terror is. Only know the definition if the television sell us it. Public enemy. Me number one, they treat me like Professor Griff. This album has been in the making a quarter century. Born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
They can't believe I saw them cheat people.
Bushmen, support the troops, but won't mention Joe Clinton. It's funny cause the rappers are posing as the gangsters, while the government taking money as bonuses for bankers. In life you learn to close your eyes and hold your tongue, but together we will overcome. There's never been a chosen one. Still trying to understand the land I stand on. I probably die from cancer, a Sangalife friends fan. No, never give up, I will never just quit. I will never give in, I will never submit. The reason that I came is bleeding from the veins of the people, cause we're equal, only freedom is the aim. This album has been in the making a quarter century, born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
We can't believe I saw them cheat people, and they have to protect and them a beat people. I'm innocent of system for the street people. Can't believe them a delete people. The system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. Innocent the bigger inside the years right now. After get up people are not slave right now. Whoa, the system needs to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. Innocent the bigger inside the years right now. After get up people are not slave right now.
To corporate guys supplying your orders, you're fighting fire with fire, I'm fighting fire with water. When they kill me, I know I'll die with a focused mind. Plus there'll be millions of me ready to multiply. Don't just mention, acknowledge me, remember to honor me. My pen and its honesty, defended equality, declared a republic and ended your monarchy. Your corporate dictatorship pretends it's democracy. I hold your bloodline accountable for every crime. Adam Smith to Rothschild, it's all been a clever lie. Two choices now, revolution or genocide. But thanks to Rupert Murdoch, neither one will be televised. This album has been in the making a quarter century, born to bless the beat and rap over recorded melody. I knew the truth since I was a small little boy. I am a product of the system I was born to destroy.
We can't believe I saw them cheat people, and they have to protect and them a beat people. I'm innocent of systems in the street people. Can't believe them a delete people. The system is to change right now. Too much youth are good on me not grave right now. Innocent the bigger inside the years right now. After get up people I'm a slave right now. Whoa, it's this thing it's a change right now. Too much with a good on me not grave right now. You know see the nigga it's a deal right now. After get up people I'm a slave right now. Yeah, yeah.
Iraq,
Libya,
Yemen,
Syria,
Bahrain,
Algeria,
Somalia,
Tunisia,
Palestine,
Nigeria,
all the way to Bolivia, all of humanity, we all are familiar. We have more that makes us similar with each other. Big up them countries that are named.
Venezuela to Mesopotamia.
We love you. Big up Akhuya Loki.
Big up Akhuya Adnan.
Khalas.
Khalas.